Unidos, Jim Mays, me pidió cuatro cosas, dice el presidente. Uno, liberación de Ernesto Mason, que es el exalcalde de San Salvador. La no reelección del fiscal general Rodolfo Delgado. El compromiso de no tocar a dos personas, Alfredo Cristiani, que es un prominente empresario, fundador del Partido Arena, y Douglas Meléndez, quien era el anterior fiscal general, o uno de los anteriores fiscales generales. También pide detener los arrestos de las personas implicadas en sobresueldos. Dice el presidente que esa reunión fue antes del 16 de septiembre, cuando cortó su comunicación con ella. Esta información también ha generado algún nivel de reacciones. El partido FMLN de izquierda ya se ha pronunciado y dicen que ¿por qué hasta ahora está revelando esta información el presidente Bukele?
Venir a estas alturas queriéndose justificar, ¿verdad?, por los señalamientos que ahora está teniendo el gobierno, yo creo que es un poco incoherente. Si hubo un momento donde él pudo haberlo dicho, pues ese era el momento. Ya a estas alturas es como quererse limpiar las manos y decir que está recibiendo presiones del gobierno de Estados Unidos. Yo creo que hay que ser responsable, y justamente con la población, más que todo por lo que a la población se le ha dicho.
Estimado radio oyente, permíteme recordarte que estás escuchando un programa de noticias alternativo en un medio de comunicación sin comerciales. Nuestra emisora de radio opera así desde su fundación en 1959 porque creemos firmemente en el poder y la influencia del contenido de nuestra programación. Pensamos que si tú aprecias y valoras el esfuerzo, nos ayudarás a financiar este proyecto de comunicación independiente. A través de nuestra programación exploramos las causas de conflictos con el fin de generar debate y sentar las bases y crear condiciones para una resolución pacífica de los diferendos. De allí nuestro nombre de Radio Pacífica. Nuestra recaudación de diciembre es la última de 2021. Te informo que contamos ahora con 12 copias de Las entrevistas con Putin, un libro del cineasta Oliver Stone con entrevistas con Vladimir Putin, presidente de la Federación Rusa. Las entrevistas fueron realizadas en un espacio de más de 2 años. En el curso de estas, el presidente ruso respondió a preguntas sobre las relaciones bilaterales entre Rusia y Estados Unidos, alegaciones de injerencia rusa en las elecciones presidenciales de Estados Unidos en 2016, el involucramiento ruso en conflictos en Siria, Ucrania y demás regiones del mundo, entre otras cosas. Tú puedes obtener una copia de este tesoro de información llamando al 818-985-5735 y haciendo una pequeña donación de $75 o visitando el sitio kpfk.org. Tenemos gente esperando tu llamada al 818-985-5735. Llámanos ya. Como tú sabrás, estamos viviendo momentos críticos en la historia de la humanidad. Además del desmantelamiento de las economías de muchas naciones en el nombre de una pandemia interminable, Estados Unidos ahora está enfrascado en rodear militarmente a la Federación Rusa. Washington lidera una coalición armada realizando maniobras militares justo frente a las fronteras rusas. Hoy más que nunca, el momento amerita sensatez y entendimiento mutuo. Llámanos ahora y obtén una de las 12 copias del libro Las entrevistas con Putin. En sus entrevistas con Oliver Stone, el presidente Vladimir Putin habla de su ascendencia a primer mandatario y sus relaciones con los presidentes William Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama y Donald Trump. El libro Las entrevistas con Putin también contiene referencias y fuentes que permiten al y a la lectora un entendimiento más profundo sobre los temas abordados. Tú puedes obtener una copia de este tesoro de información llamando al 818-985-5735 y haciendo una pequeña donación de $75 o visitando el sitio kpfk.org. Tenemos gente esperando tu llamada al 818-985-5735. Llámanos ya. Y no olvides que la mejor forma de tener una prensa libre es comprándote una. En nuestro caso, eso ya no es necesario, pues ya contamos con esta emisora y la Fundación Pacífica. Llámanos ya, 818-985-5735, o visita el sitio kpfk.org. Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
They told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
I got 3/4 of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group. Gay Taiwanese movie sings out a universal love song and upending the artistic process with Amanda Kayback. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
And meandering your way this December 9th, it's the 2021 edition of December 9th, Bathrobes, Beers, Broadsides. I'm going to be covering a little bit from Berkeley in People's Park, a little bit from the Food Not Bombs lot, as long as it remains, on Lot 27. And I'm going to wander over to the latest Tough meeting that we had today, which had a couple of new folks, but also some old-timers. And, of course, plenty of David Rovics, if you like him. So, listen in.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's begin with, let's see if we can catch an update from Wes White, who may let us know what's going on at the Pajaro River Union, Pajaro River Encampment, really, but also it's formed a chapter of the Union of the Homeless. And actually, I think before I try to reach Wes, I'll try to reach Monica Tone, who's kind of the on-the-ground leader of the folks there, that has to be said. Let's see if we can find her. So I've reached Wes White here in wherever he may be. I tried to get a hold of Monica Tone, but Monica, as has been the case almost always when I've called her, she isn't picking up or isn't answering or her phone isn't working. But Wes, your phone is working, so thank you.
Sure.
So you say you have a report from Monica Land or the Pajaro River or the folks that are...
Yeah. Well, the Pajaro River, they're going through negotiations right now. They're not satisfied with what's being offered. So they're going to make a statement to the judge asking for, to give to the attorney to ask for additional time to work it out so that it can be local and long-term. Because right now, that was actually what they were under more of the impression that it was going to be long-term and local. What they were given is down in Monterey or Seaside, which is quite a ways to travel. And then they say they have, travel covered by way of a bus ticket.
What exactly were they given? Let me interrupt you, Wes, because what exactly, remember, we're dealing with people who, some of whom may not be aware of the situation. We understand there's an injunction that will be ending on December 13th that has protected, to some extent, the campground, but it will be ended at that time, and folks will be forced to move. Some will be offered motel vouchers. I assume that's what you're talking about.
Yes, but it's only for 3 days, with no clear path to remain either. So some people, you know, were signing up under duress of like, well, this is the only place I get, but not really realizing what's going to happen next, just kind of trusting that the process is going to take care of them. But after that 3 days, that's all that the county feels they're required to do. Somebody said, what do you want, a blank check? And so I guess there's been, I don't know, 14 people signed a voucher, but, you know, that's they're free to go there, but more or less, I don't think that's, you know, some people were coming back and going, I thought it was going to be something more permanent, so, you know. I guess we're going to try to sort it out tomorrow morning. We'll be back.
Is that 14?
But we're trying to put something in writing to the judge, at least, or something that can.
Wes, is that 14 in addition to the vouchers offered a couple, 3 weeks ago or so when they were actually destroying tents?
Yeah, so apparently the voucher they're talking about is only 3 days. And there is a list for 54. They ran out of vouchers. In fact, they only really showed up with 5. But they wrote out 14. But there's 54 people on the list. So, when it was discussed amongst attorneys, it was just kind of said that everyone on the list was going to get a voucher. Well, you know, but what it came down to was you had to come in and get in line. So if you weren't there at the moment, then, you know, you weren't on the list, which is kind of weird.
Now, it can't be
down in Salinas, Monterey area.
Did this list include, I'm trying to say, we're talking about the total number of people whose tents were demolished before, or does this include simply the list of the people that...
Both. Well, they're living along the river. They're going to need more time. You know, the 13th is not going to have to be the day.
Again, I'm trying to find out if
in earnest and what they've been talking about.
I'm trying to find out if this list, if the number of vouchers that were offered, are we talking about a separate group of people than that which was offered vouchers 3 weeks ago? You know, that when a number of people were had their tents demolished, initially they came with 5 vouchers, then back with what? More. But that was on the day that you and 3 others got arrested.
They claimed it would be, up to 25 vouchers, but then they scrambled to actually make that happen, and they really only had the 5, and then they gave up the next day because there was an injunction. So they really only ever really had 5 to do with, and then they were able to write them down. But, you know, there again, they have to go all the way down to Monterey, and it's only for 3 days, and then they're stranded. They're not allowed to come back, which doesn't really help their life very much.
Now, the main argument that Attorney Anthony Prince has used, and that has to be used when you're trying to get an injunction, is there is irremediable harm that will happen at the balance of equities weighs in favor of the folks trying to stop that harm who are trying to get this injunction. And that was successful in Santa Cruz. It was successful for a while in Sausalito. Apparently it's currently successful in Novato. And I guess not under Prince, but under others, it's been successful in Petaluma and Chico. So it seems to me that I guess isn't the main argument that the harm that comes from people having to leave a piece of property, whether it's private or public, for which they've been permitted to be for a number of months, if not a number of years, and have set up, you know, their services are related to where they are. They have a place of residence there. They have a shelter there. And they expect to be able to have it for the next few months. is certainly, it would seem to be a greater harm and a greater risk to, within a week, put them into a situation where they have absolutely no shelter. And I guess what the argument of the city and the, or the county and the judge, the one the judge accepted, and I'm not too clear how much Anthony Prince contested this, was that, oh, well, they're just, you know, they're mobile, they can move, they're not going to be any worse off than they were, you know, a month ago. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, basically the argument that the judge went with that I remember hearing was that it was unacceptable to the public, therefore nobody should be there anyway, when, of course, you know, that's the only reason they're there is process of elimination. So, I mean, you know, what folks are looking at right now is trying to stay and, you know, work on negotiation longer so that their housing can be local and long term. You know, if the county can't provide housing for them, they shouldn't be taking away the housing they're providing for themselves. And if they're told they cannot return there, well, then they need a path to not have to return there.
And so, I mean, but wasn't this the same argument? I'm just wondering, how much was this argument presented and how strongly was it pressed? I think you had a somewhat different analysis of the court hearing, and of course you had access in theory to the court papers, although I don't know how generous and free Prince was with those documents. The only thing I've seen is the court's ultimate ruling, or recent ruling. So I'm just wondering, were the arguments strongly made that it would be more dangerous to have people forced to set somewhere else than where they're currently setting up, because this is where they're set up, this is the community they have, and so forth? In other words, how strongly was that put together for the judge?
Well, right now we're more working on the voucher issue and trying to get as many people. Like, there were 54 people. Some had been their homes wrecked on that first day, and quite a few others that are still along the river that have yet to get their homes restored. And of course, the ones that got their homes destroyed are, you know, have a little bit rebuilt. They're all very stretched out along the river, so they don't all live right next to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, but they're along the river, and if they're not allowed to go there anymore, you know, they're likely to stay more in Monterey County, or, you know, Santa Cruz County or Watsonville. They got three choices, right, of jurisdiction to go and, you know, create a new home. But settlement is going to fail.
Again,
no matter what, you know, it's not helping anybody.
Again, by this term, create a new home, how many of the folks would you estimate have disabilities that would make it difficult for them to move and to create a new encampment, just sort of de nouveau, you know, starting anew?
That's a good question. That's a Monica question.
And there's been differing numbers as to the number of people involved. Some people have said 100 to 200. Some have said, I guess the city or the county has said 20 or 30 or 40. I'm not quite sure what number you've said. What's your current estimate, and have you had much, based on your personal contact and your, well, I don't know, blind reckoning, your, you know, when you flew in your private airplane over the area, you know, what did you think?
Well, like I said, I mean, 54 people signed up, and I believe they're all on the river.
And so you're thinking that it's the number of people this is going to impact?
Probably higher than that.
Probably higher, but not necessarily 100 to 200.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know.
I mean, that's a long stretch of river, and I haven't been up and down it. But, you know, from what I do know, that, you know, 54 people have signed up to get a housing voucher, or at least submitted that they were interested. And, you know, it just needs to be local and needs to be long-term.
Mm-hmm. So,
no path to housing, Section 8, whatever.
Now, obviously, now onto the more sensitive but obvious question. Other people, when forced with this alternative of, you know, we're coming to get you, they went to court to get injunctions, of course, or some of them didn't, but they also resisted the move. And of course, so did people initially at this location. You were documenting that when you were arrested yourself. So what's the current situation with that? If people decided, it's just not a good idea to do that, and if so, what persuaded them that has changed since they resisted before?
I'm not sure exactly what you're asking, I guess.
Before, three women and Monica Tone and others, myself included, even you for a while, blocked the vehicles from coming in, i.e. the idea was to stop them from entering. Now, however, that is no longer the strategy, as I understand it. It's get a voucher and get ready to get out. What has changed?
That's Monica's set of folks that we're trying to broker something that, can get people out.
Well, I'm just wondering.
What happens with the remainder? That's a good question. I'm not sure what they're ready to do, prepared, or what. I don't know.
I'm asking, why has the strategy changed?
Well, I guess I'm not sure exactly what strategy there was to block the road .
Well, you were there. You saw it happen. I don't know. Wasn't that the strategy?
I do. Well, the strategy behind the thinking, I don't know.
Well, they blocked the road. I mean, part of it was saying there's an injunction when there still wasn't one yet, but there was one in process getting made. The other was there was a constant stating, this is where we're going to stay, we're going to resist this, and so forth. I can give you some for instances as to why the strategy may have changed, but I haven't been out there, and you have. You would certainly know more about it than I would think.
Okay. Yeah, well, anything that has to do with the case pending, let's not try to ask those kind of questions.
Well, again, I'm not asking those kinds of questions, although I don't see any great reason not to, but that's, I'm not going to probe too far lest I disturb the powers that be. But there is a reason a strategy has changed. And people might wonder why that is.
Monica is not opposed to housing. Quite a few people would like to be indoors with electricity and water, and a door that locks. So they just want, they need it to be more permanent. And people have been out on that river for 10 years, 15 years. It's just, become a way of life. But some people are tired, and at least 54 people are tired. And they're interested, and especially if they can kind of go together or whatever. They're hip to it. Monica's interested, that's kind of where it's at. If they can get housing, why not?
Are you actually suggesting that you think the county and the city or whoever is seriously proposing to give housing to these people? I'd be very surprised if you think that.
No.
Well, then what the hell are we talking about?
That's what we talked about in the very beginning.
Well,
it's a three-day voucher. It's not enough. It's only for 14 people.
Well, that's the point. That's the point. Since they're not about to give housing, but just vouchers, why would you want to persuade people to accept this kind of a deal if you know it's not going to happen? I'm not too clear on this.
Well, it's supposed to be a path toward permanent housing. There's a couple of ladies that I guess are taking advantage of it down here. And, of course, the county doesn't have a capacity for a blank check. So, that's what was promised. So now they're coming for that promise. Where's the end of the rainbow? Where's the pot of gold?
Well,
it's a leprechaun. We want it now.
Uh-huh.
This county stated it. Now they want it.
What I'm saying is, do you actually think the judge will make any kind of decision that would say anything like you can't move on these people until you actually are providing them with either real housing or long-term temporary housing?
Well, I'll tell you, that's the impression they were under.
impression who was under?
The 54 people that signed up was under the impression they were going to get permanent housing.
And now, is that your impression, Wes, a man who's been around for a decade looking at this issue and struggling with this issue? Is that what you would advise them is actually likely to happen?
It's
a straight question. You know, I'm not trying to get at anything. I am saying it just seems unlikely to me that these promises are going to be kept. And I guess there might be all kinds of reasons why you might play with the promises or try to use them as a strategy and a greater perspective as to what you're trying to do. And that's fine. You know, and one shouldn't necessarily insist you reveal all your cards. But to answer the question fairly, I don't think is an unfair request on my part, which is to say, you know, no, they're obviously not going to give people housing. They won't. You know, and the judge won't require it. He already hasn't required it. There's no reason to think he will require it. But there may be a reason for us to, you know, play along with this game and assume that, and so, because we're trying to find some kind of answer for people. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay. Sort of.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, the other thing is, you know, folks have been cleared from the river at least once before a year ago and probably at other times as well. And you've seen this kind of clearing happen in Salinas in Chinatown. And admittedly, it gets worse and more property gets denied to homeless people, even just setting up survival encampments. But, in fact, in the past, people have been allowed to come back. They were allowed to come back for a year. Is there any reason to think this will not happen again here?
Well, at the same time, there was some talk about, well, you're not going to be able to come back. And so 3 days later, what is their solution? And they're definitely understanding that that's not a long-term solution, and that's what they were expecting to get from the county. So, we're formulating a response to see about getting more time to actually get it to be local and long-term. So, otherwise, you're not reducing homelessness, you're not ending it, you're not doing anything toward actually mitigating much issue other than putting people out of the way and taking all their stuff, which they're opposed to. So, you know, we're writing a response. I don't know if it'll be even before the end of business today. Probably not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm not, again, you're talking about the legal approach, and yeah, I know you're reluctant to discuss that as well as strategies that folks might use, and that's fine. But the issue for me is, you know, if you look at the real situation on the ground, what's happened in the past, don't you think it's likely that folks will be essentially moving back to the same places they've been before, or do you see some reason that that's not likely to happen, let's say, within the next few months?
Well, you know, probably not for at least, 2 or 3 weeks. I'm sure they'll be pretty intense about it, trying to make people make new habits. And as that happens, you know, they're again, they have to go different places. So which jurisdiction? And that's the big deal. But apparently the county's going to step up their game, and they're even getting in some kind of director, for all the issues the county has, and you know, coordinate efforts towards solutions. Bullshit.
Well, yeah, exactly. I think that.
You know,
I agree with you.
They're just going to help expedient. You know, yeah.
Yeah, it is bullshit. I mean, but the point is, I think the point is, I mean, I'm trying to. I'm not looking at the legal or what the county says or what the attorneys say, because it's all kind of secondary to what's the real situation is on the ground and what's really likely to happen. That's what I'm interested in getting the assessment of, and it sounds like you're reluctant to talk about that, or maybe you don't know what it is, or maybe you think it reveals a strategy, and that's fine. You know, believe it or not, I'm on your side. You know, so.
Well, they're going to try to, you know, we're trying to get, I suppose, at this point, so that we can figure out in the words of bullshit.
Right.
And make it mean something instead.
And so,
they want to make it real, you know. I mean, they're not opposed to working with the county or whatever if it actually worked with them.
How likely do you think that is?
at this point, not very well, right? I mean, you know, if they're only getting a three-day thing and it's only for as many people to show up, not even 54 people on the list, it should already just be already written out for everybody.
One cannot
should already have the rooms ready.
One cannot
for 3 days.
One cannot disagree with
that. And, you know, that's coming to be a shock to them. So being able to tell you what they're thinking and what they're doing right now, you know, I mean, they're processing some of that still.
You know, I'm not really asking what they're thinking and doing. I don't expect you to know that or even just to talk about it. I was asking you for your assessment. And, you know, I think you've given
me... I'm hoping for an extension.
You're hoping for an extension. Okay.
Well, something has to be submitted first.
Of course. I'm not saying that. I'm just, yeah, okay. So any reports from Salinas or Marina that you want to pass on?
The Salinas CHP is taking people off Caltrans all over the place. So they posted a notice on the Sunday. They did not show up on the Sunday. But they're, you know, they're there today, so improper notice.
Hmm.
But yet, you know, it's already done. Everybody's stuff is already gone.
And no one has resisted using Martin versus Boise, let's say.
No one's going to try to get arrested today, no.
That wouldn't be to try to get arrested. The words are to risk arrest, as far as I would see it.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, they mentioned a couple of things. You know, they mentioned the notice wasn't even the right day. You know, they're like, where are we supposed to go? And, you know, then the notice was one of the big issues. And the guy's just like, I don't care. And, you know, they were all laughing. And, you know, so I heard a lot of complaint. But, you know, you just let it go.
Did you video most
of the city side now? So, you know, and before the city was like, you can't be here either. So, you know,
did you?
I don't know what to do, man. I mean, they got some of their stuff on the side. It's all muddy.
You're talking about Salinas now, and what the Caltrans and the city side of things?
Yeah, well, so they were on state property. Now they're on either city property or private property, one or the other.
How many people are being impacted?
You know,
how many people
be on either side?
How many people are being impacted by this?
That was 30 people at the spot that I'm thinking of, and they've been doing it since at least Monday or Tuesday, up and down the highway. So they didn't make it there first, but they're there today.
Well, what would you call that spot as a, you know, a sort of a name?
Well, they were starting to call it the Hillside.
The Hillside, okay. And anything about Marina that you want to pass on?
Well, more people still, you know, getting their vehicles ticketed and towed, their RVs. They're kind of scattering around in parking lots some places. You know, they're just constantly persecuted and yelled at. One dude, he's trying to get a hold of his RV and bike, and county sheriff's saying they don't even have a record of it. And it's like, well, what should I do with my vehicles? You know, because it's clearly on my video of them taking it. So where's the chain of custody at?
Okay, now in Santa Cruz County, or at least in North Santa Cruz County in Santa Cruz, I've heard that the Sheriff's Department and the Santa Cruz Police have reached the point where they have no space to tow vehicles to yards anymore. Is that at all the situation in Monterey County?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer.
Yeah, okay. I appreciate your fielding this stuff, and I understand it doesn't make you happy on either side of the road there, so to speak, but I'll pass it on if that's okay with you.
Yeah, well, we just keep on getting our butt kicked, and it just sucks. Steve Kerrigan, I had a meeting, or we were going to have a meeting with the city manager, but, you know, the overtures of sweeps, I guess, just went out. You know, because really it's, you know, that's nice, but you're still going to do sweeps anyway. And I guess in the end, you know, those kind of plans are pretty sour off the top.
Steve Kerrigan is who?
So I demanded it be documented and video documented. He's like my privacy, you know what I'm saying? You're on the clock. And so it's just no meeting.
Who is Steve Kerrigan?
He's the city manager of Salinas.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's, I don't think it's unfair at all to request that you document conversations you have with him. In fact, I think it's, even though it's legally questionable, I think the public has a right to know the content of those kinds of conversations with public officials. So, particularly,
exactly. Yeah, because I don't need to create inaccuracies or you know, I just need people to think for themselves. Is kind of what I've been trying to do, you know.
Any encouraging news about union organizing in different places? Because you yourself have gone all around the state with a homeless union, and you may be hearing something from other places out of, instead of beyond Salinas.
Yeah, South Salinas been going strong. Chico is actually gaining a lot of momentum. Those are in Oakland, you know. And Fresno is having a hard time of it.
Mm-hmm. Any word from Southern California?
Up and down. Sausalito's got its own, almost like a war going on. You know, the police are just getting more brutal over there.
Yeah, I noticed some of his Facebook page of Robbie Powelson. For people who are interested in listening to this, you can go to Facebook and look up Robbie Powelson and see the struggle. They're even arresting... Now, not quite mainstream reporters, but
media
that the mainstream is paying a little bit of attention to. Any news from San Diego, Los Angeles, San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara?
Not to me directly.
Well, I'm going to leave it there and thank you for hanging in there while we talk about this. Anything you want to ask me or anything you want to add?
Just video everything, you know, ask questions, find the person in charge and ask them, you know, reasonable questions, you know, what about Martin versus Boise, because there isn't enough shelter for everyone, you know, we talk about the whole city, you know, asking them, you know, I guess the legal question is always my focus, but, document what you lost, what I'm telling people now, I guess, is documenting what they lost. And, you know, talk about the traumatic thing. Do you want to do a lawsuit? You know, there's so much harm and damage that happens in such a small amount of time.
Well, again, the problem is you are appealing to the conscience or the reasonableness of the city officials. And unless you have the power...
I'm trying to get them on record for, making mistakes.
That's true, too.
Yes, right?
That's
because
true.
There is no right way to do it.
Right, well, the only time this makes any difference is if people stand fast and actually try to use the precedent. If they don't try to use it, the city and the county couldn't care less. See, that's the problem.
Exactly. But it's very overwhelming and it's very scary to get in front of it.
Of course. Then I will leave you to be on the front lines while I record from the safety of my boudoir.
Okay. All right. Well, have fun. Good luck. Stay warm.
Thank you, Wes. Bye-bye.
He was listening to voices talking in his head. If you grew up in America, you know exactly what they said. And with every job we lose, however bad things get, there's a black man in the White House on the TV set. And we can blame it all on him and his entire race, because they no longer know their place. You can hear the voices by the early light of dawn. You can see the flag waving on the state house lawn. He was listening to voices. You could say that he was crazy for thinking certain people are just born to be lazy. He could see it on the cop shows. They don't know right from wrong. The race war is coming, and now it won't be long. I promise it was not his original notion. If you want to start a war first, you have to set the war in motion. You can hear the voices by the early light of dawn. You can see the flag waving on the State House lawn. Said the conflict's coming soon. And he walked into the church on the 17th of June, the very date of the rebellion that never was to be, for which 35 were hanged in that very city, for which the church was burned, for which the church was banned, for which there's been no atonement in a sick and troubled land. You can hear the voices, and by the early light of dawn, you can see the flag waving on the State House lawn. You can hear the voices, and by the early light of dawn, you can see the flag waving on the State House lawn. You can see the flag waving on the State House lawn.
David Rovex sung and I believe wrote that song, State House Lawn. The day after Trump announced he was running for president, Rovex writes, on June 17, 2015, a white supremacist killed 9 people at a historic black church in Charleston, South Carolina, in an attempt to foment a race war. So a few days ago, I went up to Berkeley and picked up some new issues of Street Spirit and Street Sheet, 2 Bay Area homeless-souled and somewhat homeless-written publications. You can find them, some of them anyway, if you're lucky, and if they haven't all disappeared, at the Food Not Bombs clothing table and at the Sub Rosa Cafe, if and when it ever is opening up, in the news rack there. And you can also find them if you get a hold of me by phone on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. Also, you can grab me if you see me downtown in my red Volvo station wagon sticker mobile, and I usually have some with me. You can also find Street Spirit, maybe even Street Sheet, online using that name. You'll be able to find either one. So check them out. Also, we're looking for publication, well, for writers who want to write about homeless and poverty topics. Get in touch with me if you have any further questions. Again, 423-4833-423-HUFF, area code 831 if you're out of the area. And while in Berkeley, I meandered over to People's Park, which is still there, and you get to hear some of my musings as a meander, and then an interview with a woman named Tree.
December 6th, People's Park, Berkeley, about 2 o'clock. And in the Telegraph Avenue side of the park, we have a line of 5 tents and a table with a stereo on it, and I'm not sure whether he's doing a musical creation of some kind, or different than it was a month ago. Thank you.
5/10 on one side of the Telegraph Avenue part of the park, and about 6 or 7 on the other side. Folks are playing basketball, and of course there's about 6 or 7 tents along Dwight Way, and then a cluster of tents, and of course the People's Kitchen on the far side of the park, experiencing the usual that people live outside feel when they're holding their water as they head for a restroom. The People's Park restroom is where I'm heading. It's a brick structure which was created around the time of, gosh, what, the early 90s, I believe. I see a rat here. Or a large mouse. This kitchen, I'm told, is under construction. It's being put on a cement platform. Other structures look like they're going up. It does appear that the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 20, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 35 or 40 tents up here in the Bowditch side. Bowditch is one street up from Telegraph, parallel to it. Our current number of tents. I'm here in People's Park, and I've run into a friendly resident and her friendly pooch.
Two pooches.
Okay. What's the name of this pooch that's one?
This is Island.
And what is the name? And your name, of course.
Tria.
You are Tria.
T-R-E-A, capital H. Because those are all the letters of Earth.
Okay.
But I spell it Tria.
See, trying to seize on Earth, so
double
to speak.
Dip, because our subconscious sees all. Our subconscious sees everything. Beyond anything we could ever imagine.
Now, you say that you've been here about a week.
Yes.
And this, you brought this tent with you?
No, I purchased it. And I overdrafted my account, $200, because it was the only one they had. And so then my neighbor gave me $200 so that I didn't have to pay the overdraft. So we bonded on many levels. And
your neighbor in the park? Or?
Right here, yeah, Ronnie. Ronnie's my good neighbor. And he is actually the brother of someone that I bonded with in the showers, a girl.
And the showers being here in Berkeley?
Yes, it's called West Campus. And every night at 7:15, for 1 hour, you can take a group shower.
And this is true for even the lowly poor?
Well, that is what it's for, yes, yes. And I see, you know, it's an interesting mix because there's a lot of seniors that, you know, I could keep talking for days because I immersed myself in the homeless population in San Diego in 2012.
And what led you down there?
I split from my husband, who is a combat veteran that I fought the VA for since 1999. And he was like roadkill. And he had helped me through a really traumatic experience. But as it turns out, he was a very highly trained combat Marine of the Vietnam era who had severe PTSD and a mass in his occipital, no less. But how did it get there?
I have no idea.
Well, there's two theories. One, he was blown up by a mortar, and that's why he wrecked his back, so he should get back pay to Vietnam for his back injury. Or, when he was 19 years old and he went in the Marine Corps, and he was an all-American athlete in every sport, lived in Tennessee, youngest of 9 children, and considered black, and he considered himself Native American, but that's irrelevant. But anyway, he was going to be drafted, so he went into the Marine Corps. And the Marine Corps said, we're going to circumcise you, and long as we're down here, how would you like a vasectomy? And I just think that's a really odd thing, because back in those days, if you were white, you couldn't get a vasectomy. They didn't want you to. So anyway, there's a whole thing on eugenics that that happened. I don't want you to tire your arm out. But
Appreciate that. But anyway,
the VA, I ended up fighting the VA for him because he was so damaged. And
eventually you got to San Diego when you left him.
Yes, yes. We split up many, many times. But finally, on January 12th, 2012 is when we actually physically split for good.
How
as a church.
How long were you in San Diego?
I immersed myself literally in the homeless population in San Diego for about a year, about one or two years.
By immersed yourself, you mean you lived there outside?
Yes, and I actually was accepted into their big project called, what was it called? It was a big project that San Diego had saved $100 million to, and what are we going to do with this money? So everybody got together, and they had $100 million, and they decided to give it to, I'm trying to remember the name of the organization, but with $100 million, they refurbished the old World Trade Center in San Diego, which was like a beautiful old building, and provided 73 subsidized studios for $100 million.
So you had one of those studios?
No. I was in a dorm situation with many other women. And this was the time that I had to, really accept the fact that we're all the same. We all believe that we are important and that matter, no matter how dysfunctional we are or how damaged we are or how poor we are. And I had never lived in a dormitory situation. I always had a man in my life, and I always lived on a ranch or on the beach or always lived where I recreated. And then I just found myself with no money. And so I was in this, it was called PATH, People Assisting the Homeless, is a big organization. And
they found a way to dispose of $100 million.
Yes, and Alpha Project. Alpha Project was a guy that had a great idea. He literally hired homeless people to do projects for himself dealing with homeless. So he was getting a lot of money from the city and the county and the state and everything.
Did you apply for a grant? Or?
No. Well, yes, but, kind of in a different realm. But anyway, he got greedy. As I think most people do, if they don't get greedy, they get overtaken by greedy people. Because when there's money on the table, the fastest, greediest person is going to for sure get it.
But you only stayed there for a year.
Well, they kicked me out. They actually put my stuff out on the street one day. They made sure that I wasn't there. And then they literally put it out on the street and locked me out.
And why was that?
Let me try to remember exactly why. Because I wouldn't sign under penalty of perjury that I was a tenant there.
Why did they want you to sign that? Because you were a tenant and they needed some documentation?
I'm going to tell you the truth. And this is really heavy-duty stuff. Toni Atkins, does that name ring a bell? She was the Speaker of the House, Congress, California Congress.
I don't follow state politics much.
Okay, anyway, but she's a lesbian married to a woman named, can't remember her name. But anyway, her wife is Civic San Diego. And Civic San Diego was part of running this homeless shelter. And that was, and I actually have an article from the Reader magazine, which is the kind of the home cool magazine that tells all the stories about what they were actually doing and the kind of money that they were using. And this article mentioned back at that time, Toni Atkins' wife, and I'll remember her name, but you can find out. Because Tony's still in the Senate. She's really nice, very nice. But
in any case, remember, why did they kick you out?
So they have got, she was, had whatever many millions of dollars to be Civic San Diego. And I said, well, what is this? I don't want to get in, because I've been to court many times defending myself against wrongful liars and, and so I actually have the things with their names on it that they wanted me to be a tenant. So it was kind of like a money scam, if you want my opinion.
You didn't want to be part of a money scam.
Well, I didn't want to sign that I was a tenant when I wasn't. Okay. I wasn't a tenant. I was just staying in a four-person, with a waist-high barricade. There was, I think, 150 women in a big room. And you had to leave at 8 o'clock in the morning. You couldn't come back until 5. So this was just, pasta and soda and milk for dinner, come in and sleep and then have cereal, coffee, milk for breakfast.
Do you have any idea how much they got per woman for this?
They got $6 million a year to run that.
For 150 women.
And about 150 men, more or less. Or maybe the total men and women was 150.
Well, what did you do after San Diego? Where did you go?
Well, I mean, there I was with my shit out on the sidewalk. And I bond with, like, the guards and the people and, you know, people that the nice people. I bond with nice people. But assholes and liars and cheaters hate me. And I don't care for them. But anyway, I mean, I was sad. But I did have a car. And my daughter lived in San Diego at the time. Oh, and I rented an art studio. And which was only like $150 a month, and I'm an artist, so that worked out for a while. And then I got a job in Washington State, in the same city that my youngest brother lives in. So I ended up going to Washington from San Diego, leaving my art studio, which was really a good deal. I would just sleep in my car, and I never slept there. You couldn't go there. You had to be gone from, you know, like midnight till 6 a.m. You couldn't be in the building. But still, for $150 a month in downtown San Diego was nice. But then I got a job supposedly in Washington, but it didn't work out. But I did stay there for about a year, had a couple situations up there. And then I'm a horse trainer, so I got a job just randomly at Golden Gate Park in 2015. So I came down to be a groom at the racetrack, and because of some past experiences, that didn't work out. So I was here in Berkeley, and I knew that my grandfather had gone to law school here 100 years ago. Back then it wasn't, you know, I mean, he graduated in 1921, more or less, Bolt Hall. And so I want to, you know, I really feel at home here for a lot of reasons. And I'll show you, here's the book that my grandfather wrote about our family. And he published this in 1975. And there's my wonderful grandfather, Ralph F. Bagley, who did an extra year of law school at Georgetown. And then he met my grandmother on a job that his...
I want to stick with you.
Okay. Well, let me show you. I hope it's in here.
You're looking at a tattered book that is... I have no way of proving it's yours, but by cracky, that's what you're telling me?
Yes. It's got my favorite picture. I hope it's here, but it might not be.
No picture of the granddaughter, I suppose?
Well, no. My grandfather... It's a picture of... My grandfather was Deputy District Attorney of Los Angeles, and I was at the opening of the District Attorney's Office in 1952 when I was 4 years old. So it's kind of... And it's,
you see all the inner workings of the DA's office.
Well, you know, not... I mean, in a way, you know, just collaterally, my dad was a contractor who built the Matterhorn at Disneyland when I was in second grade. So I had kind of a magical life, except I was a creepy kid, and I was fat and ugly and didn't have any friends.
Did you feel you were ugly yourself?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt.
People kept telling you you were ugly?
No, they kind of, like, patronized me, but I was, you know, I was pudgy and was creepy. I was a creepy kid.
Pudgy isn't ugly to everyone, you know.
No, but anyway, you know, that's how we perceive, you know, and how we become who we are. And if I was, you know, I was actually, you know, had nice features and everything, and if I wasn't pudgy, I could have become a really snobby jerk or something by, you know, thinking I was better than I was. But having low self-esteem is sort of a benefit in a way to keep you from becoming...
Interesting. So when you left San Diego and these different various jobs, you know, in here in... over in San Francisco as a horse trainer, were you mostly outside or in a vehicle, or were you mostly indoor?
I have a van, and I've had a van.
Living in your van?
Yes, in Berkeley since 2015, and I finally got this tent from Homeless Access Center where I've gotten my mail since, you know, 2015 or 16.
Has the oversized vehicle ordinance, whatever they call it up here,
it's just a little van.
Has it impacted you in terms of...
It impacted my... I did have a motorhome, and they gave me an illegal ticket, which I didn't fight. But I did have a motorhome here, but I had to sell it because I got a lot of tickets on this vehicle. So ticketing is it's a poor person's tax. It keeps people, you know, being homeless is like having two full-time jobs. So I've been in Berkeley. I did spend some time in Texas with my daughter, but I really have been working hard to... I have a nonprofit which is called, it's named after my great uncle, and that's a whole other story, but it's called Care Farming. And Care Farming is, it's not a rescue, it's not a rehab, it's a ranch, a farm, using animals or agriculture to, and it literally is known to heal people of Alzheimer's, autism, dementia, depression, and it creates value itself. And it, you capture the value of humans, which is in lieu of, you know, money. Money is fake. The petrodollar is dead, and it's really, really, really devastated America with inflation and all the funny games they play. So Care Farming would solve poverty. Organic agriculture heals the earth. Eating organic heals ourselves. And so I've really been trying to create a care farm here in Berkeley.
And back to Farmer Tree in a moment, but first, a little music from a musician Rovix.
Albert was in Pearl Harbor. It's just where he happened to be after serving through the war in the Navy. It was the 6th of August. He'd never felt this way before. He decided then and there there was no way to morally fight a war. Albert joined the Society of Friends. Like him, they believed the means must match the ends. He resigned from the Navy, for he would be no one's tool. Who did not believe in the golden rule? You'd do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, the golden rule. The golden rule. What do you do when you join the opposition? Collected signatures, sent in the petitions. Sometimes you must bear witness, you can't just burn the fuel. So Albert and his comrades set out on the golden rule. You'd do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, the golden rule. Traveled across the ocean, they searched in vain to find remedies for the scars from the radiation rain. Every week a new explosion in this planetary duel to test weapons of mass destruction. Enter the golden rule. They were arrested in Hawaii, at least this particular crew. The Hiroshima Phoenix was the first boat to make it through, to publicize the tests that were unraveling the school, and to introduce the golden rule. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, the golden rule. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, the golden rule. Golden rule.
On June 20th, 2015, the golden rule hit the water again. This historic boat, which had sailed to the Pacific to protest the nuclear bomb testing there in the 1950s, was fixed up by the Veterans for Peace so they could once again sail the waters of the Pacific to oppose U.S. militarism.
very specifically for about 2 years, and going to the homeless organizations and telling them about my...
What kind of reception have you had?
Like a really bad one-night stand when I go there the next time.
I see. That doesn't sound good.
You know, even though... And I try to bond with everyone, and some people don't want to bond, some people are pretend to bond, and other people really do bond and listen and care, and so the process is moving forward, and I believe that it's a very spiritual blessing that you came here today because of the many things that are going on. And I mean, it can't be an accident that I've been where I've been, and I don't mean to seem overly important, but you know, just to give you an example, you know, I told you about the marriage to the veteran, and we were going through some legal stuff that's a whole nother story about my horses. And so I needed to live in Riverside County because we were forced to go to court for 1,100 days to defend ourselves against our horses being starved by animal control when our ranch burned. So we had to go to court to defend ourselves against animal cruelty and of what the disaster facility did to our own horses. So I just looked in the Craigslist and found a ranch, went out there, decided to rent it, and in 2010 is when I rented the ranch, and we moved January 12th, 2012. So we're there for almost 2 years, and the owner of the ranch was the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood, who was over in Egypt most of the time supporting Morsi, who got elected president during the Arab Spring at the exact same time that we were living on his ranch.
And was ousted by the generals. Yeah.
Yes, and he was...
But let me get back to Berkeley and the situation here.
Okay.
You've been here for a week, and you what made you finally decide to move into a tent here?
I got that tent from Homeless Access Center.
Had you been trying to come here previously, or into the People's Park?
No, I just kind of, I do what I sort of like, what seems good at the moment. But I rented an art studio in Northwest Berkeley, and one of the people there decided that I was homeless and started accusing me of all kinds of things, and so they ordered me to leave, and I felt like I was going to have a heart attack because I was paid in full, and that was in April, and so I did end up fighting the eviction. And
were you successful?
Well, we actually did a settlement conference this morning at and we did make a settlement, and so in preparation for an actual having to take my stuff out of the art studio, I did decide to come here, and it was a good idea because this is a place where everybody knows about. So, you know, I can tell my story, I can help other people with, you know, like issues like, you know, like the problems that they have. Nobody, you know, the organizations get their grant, and at that point they're in direct competition with the host, if you really look at it, because then they've got to support themselves and their employees and all that. So there is a real problem with the whole, you know, the whole what do you call it, the homeless service organizations taking the money and not having accountability of what happens with the money.
What has your week here been like? I mean, how would you describe the high points and the low points?
The high points are bonding with people. I've got some really good friends. A weird low point that ended up creating some good value was somebody that I had met on the street who, you know, I allowed to come into my tent. Then I found him in my tent when I wasn't here three times, and so the last time was the day before yesterday, and I usually get up at 2 a.m. I go work at the art studio and I do my research and my art and everything, and I come back here about 7:30 or 8, and he's in my tent creeping around and making a mess. So I said, get the fuck out. And so he started screaming at me, you know, you white bitch, and, you know, really late screaming and trying to get anybody of color to
bond with him.
Yes, but he's really a very dysfunctional crack. He's so, and you know, I have empathy for him. But anyway, two guys that I know, but I didn't actually came over to support me, and you know, said, I heard what happened. Are you okay? And I was just so touched. And then one was from the, you know, so there's you know, like different groups here. So there's a group over there along the street, and they are... the one guy was from over there, and the other guy was from over there. And I have a little thing on the back of my van, and I've been so poor that this chair I got yesterday, I picked things up. And so I'm starting a business called Grampsy, after my grandfather. So I'm going to hire, get together with Ronnie and hopefully George and Mouse and those other two guys. But anyway, I found those little round trampolines. And it was out in front. So they started doing back front flips on the trampoline. And then we did Zach Bush's 4-minute workout. Do you know about that? Do you know about Zach Bush?
No, I don't. But before you tell me about that, what was the ultimate outcome of this incident that was the low point?
They just know that I'm sincerely nice, that I'm here to save myself. If they want to know anything about nutrition or, help me with anything, I will, double up and help them with whatever they need. It's just like I call it kindness, the golden rule.
How many people would you estimate are living in this camp?
Or
in
the
various tents?
50 to 100.
And how many folks would you say you've met personally?
50. I talked to, I traded for a bicycle up there, Tony, and he fixes bicycles. George... Look at this. It takes 8 hours.
Showing me your necklace.
Yeah, and he made this for me, and he had a necklace on, so I admired it. So then we went and bought some beads. So then he made this for me, and I bought him a whole bunch of beads so he can make other things. So then he set this tent up for me. So I bought him a tent like this.
This is a relatively large tent. What is it? 12 by.
Yeah, it's 12 by 16, I think.
And it has a partition as well.
Yeah. And so George has the identical tent over there. And, so we have like a relationship. And he is so talented and skilled because he spent a lot of time in prison.
Because
he was in prison a lot. Mm-hmm. And I believe it was over-criminalization, lack of defense. But what it did was it gave him skills because he's a trained builder. Certified, electrician, carpentry, plumbing, at the highest level. He's an artist who can sit and spend 8 hours creating beautiful work. But he has a lot of rage, and so I want to turn that rage into gratitude, because if he hadn't spent that 6 years from 15 to 21 in lockdown learning and being forced, he'd be like the most damaged tweaker here. And these kids, they had such dysfunctional childhoods. I mean, they started having sex at 8-9 years old and doing drugs, and it was intentional, to destroy the black community through many means. I kind of laugh because everybody here, myself included, we're like, 2 to 12-year-olds in adult bodies with mouths. And words are very powerful, and they create spells. And one of my biggest gripes is the rap music, which is so destructive. And so I'm kind of like, because that, they put it on really loud, so I keep remembering to get some earplugs. So, I'm just trying to create the opportunity for anyone to improve their health, to set goals, to do art. And I also, I'm working on my care farm model and prove to Berkeley that it works. And even though I'm in there's a really cool guy named Ari, and he's the social worker for the university. He works for UC Berkeley. And I do have a degree from UC Irvine in social ecology, of all things. So I really understand the workings of urban planning.
Thank you.
You look like a friend of mine, but it's a lady, which I'm an artist, so I see features. And
what kind of art do you do?
Drawing, painting, ceramics. Let's see, where's my... I have my ceramics right here. Oh, there's some pieces. I pay to go to a ceramic studio, so this is my work...
You're showing me a bowl?
Yeah, this is from 9/9/2021. This one, the glaze didn't turn out too well, but this is from...
You're able to make a living with this?
No, this is for part of the care farm, Art Heals. And I did plan at the art studio, most of my stuff revolves around horses, so I was going to get a vendor's license at the racetrack and sell commissions and build my art care farm through my art at the racetrack, because I was a licensed racehorse owner, and I was married to a chiropractor. So back in the 80s, I got horses literally from the glue factory that were going to be killed, and my chiropractor husband would adjust them, and our daughter competed internationally on horses from the glue factory.
This is your fourth husband?
That was my second husband. I married an artist, and sadly he passed away because he was really nice. But these are some other...
You're showing me a blue glazed cup or bowl.
Yeah, that's a bowl. And then this, I like... You know, this
looks like an egg cup here.
And I was into dragonflies that week. And then once a month, I'm in a beekeeper clinic where I'm going to become a certified beekeeper in a year, which is about 9 months from now, because I've been in it for about 3 or 4 months. But one of the other people in the clinic teaches math to junior high school in San Francisco. So we each month we have a project. So I decided to make these little gorilla bee farmer clay discs for the junior high school kids to encourage them to plant wildflowers for the bees and at least be aware of bees needing flowers in order to make honey and to pollinate, because if we lose the bees, that's the end of humanity, without a doubt. I mean, no bees, no people. So we have to provide for the bees, because different things are killing the bees, like glyphosate and GMOs and pesticides.
And bee population has been severely reduced.
Yes, yes. And so...
is that changing at all or not?
Well, there's a guy named Dr. Zach Bush. Have you heard that name?
Yes, from you.
Oh, okay. Well, he is a triple board certified medical doctor, and he was doing, he's an endocrinologist, palliative care, and some other high level MD specialty, and he was doing chemotherapy things, and he noticed that the cancer clusters left the Northeast and went down to New Orleans and the Mississippi down there, and so he started studying it, and he totally figured out that it was from Roundup glyphosate in, you know, just being put on all the food, all the crops, getting into the water, because it was so intense there that that he really believes and has proven that it's glyphosate that is destroying our health, and it's also destroying the planet, and it's destroying the bees. But one of his international organizations called Farmers Footprint, which is to use organic farming, heals the earth, which heals us. So my little, you know, my care farm.
Do you have a website yourself?
No, I'm very low tech, so I've been planting my own seeds, and here's a seed for you. That came from somebody that makes soup at the farmer's market.
From one CD person to another.
Yes, yes. And if you plant that, it will grow into most likely itself. But that's what's amazing. And if you listen to Zach Bush, I mean, he has many, 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 you know, interviews. Plus, he has his own podcasts, and you can learn so much from him. And I mean, just it's just so beautiful. And he says if we keep on the current trajectory, humanity and the planet Earth are gone in 70 years, without a doubt.
Is there much community happening here in the People's Park?
I hope so.
You've been here a week. What's been your experience?
Well, I'm trying to sort of bond the different groups into, you know, here there's supposed to be no conflict. If you've got an enemy out there, you want to come here. And I encourage people to do art. Yesterday they were jumping on the bounce thing. We did the 4-minute exercise. And, you know, I do stand out. I mean... You know, I'm the oldest person here, I'm pretty sure, at least close. And, you know, I seem to have resources, but I've just learned to be very thrifty because I live on Social Security and half of my paycheck goes to my car payment. And my,
You still have your vehicle.
Yes, thank God. But I have 18 more payments. And,
You bought it new or?
Yes, yes. I went to Pacific Nissan in Pacific Beach because a friend of mine worked there. And he said, come on the weekend. We have free hot dogs. And I
bought a car instead, which wasn't free.
It was a Nissan Sentra, which a 2013 Nissan Sentra, which I, you know, I've always had horses, and I need something that I can sleep in and carry a couple bales of hay. So 2 years later, I was able to upgrade. But I got both cars literally with no money down and no payment for 30 days. So I had a big, you know, I was underwater a lot.
And you have a phone, Priscilla?
Yes, yes. My daughter actually pays for my phone. And I do have an Obama, they call them Obama phones, but I dropped it, so it's kind of broken.
Well, let me kind of wind this one down, give you a chance to perhaps put in some important details briefly
okay.
that you haven't been able to cover, that you might want to cover. And also, off mic, you can give me your number, and I will call you for updates. And I'll give you my card. You can
super
call me.
Duper. Yeah, that'd be great.
I do a twice weekly net show. It's not on the radio. It's on the net.
Okay.
But
okay.
So it's
are,
so.
Is it, do you see you, or is it?
No, it's audio.
Okay.
It's audio.
That's good, though. I listen. I mean, I pretty much listen to, you know, the people that I like. I'll start listening to you. You know, I try to get better every day, a little bit better, in any way, shape, or form that I can. And so I listen to a lot of podcasts, and that's how I found Zach Bush. And you can listen to the smartest people in the world and, you know, get their whole life's work, you know, in 1 to 2 hours. It's amazing.
And we have been talking with?
You mean who? I like Rich Roll. He's
no, you.
Oh, my name. I'm Tria, T-R-E-A-H.
Hey, Tria. And if people want to reach you, you're not on the Internet, but... if any,
come to People's Park.
People's Park, and look for the big white and blue tent.
And ask for Tria the dog lady, because I have two little Jack Russells.
Jack Russells are...
my service dogs.
My service dogs.
Yes.
Well, Tria, thank you. I'm going to leave it there.
I know a man. He has brown eyes. Most mornings he gets up around sunrise. He likes to put butter on just about everything. He likes to walk in the park, listen to the birds sing. I know a man. He has two gorgeous kids. He likes to take them on trips like his father did. At the end of the day, they all come over to my place where we talk about school and what happened on MySpace. I know a man who plays basketball. He's about 5 feet 10 inches tall. He tries to grow flowers. They usually don't bloom. He's got a picture of Elvis on the door to his room. I know a man. He thinks life is good and everything will be fine, as he knows that it should. And the eyes of the people, and the eyes of the law, would soon be open to the things that he saw. I know a man with a beautiful family, who knows that someday, right here in this society, we'll all walk taller. Fences will mend when I can say proudly, this is my husband. I know a man.
And the name of that song was I Know a Man. Writes Rovick, the U.S. Supreme Court legalized marriage on June 26, 2015. Before that date, the institution only applied to heterosexual couples in many states.
And still in People's Park, or I should say near it, I wandered down to Telegraph Avenue in Berkeley, and I found this.
The corner of Telegraph and Dwight, it's December 6th, actually. And we have a series of chess tables, or tables set up with chess sets. And we're talking about, six different sets. One pair of players is playing.
I haven't talked to your boss about it yet.
And the... There's a
turkey sandwich. Nobody's touched it. It's right here.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. And it looks like... So people actually play free here. They don't... You know, and there's a caretaker who's looking on and kind of observing things. And you can play chess free. It's sort of like... New York City, almost. I don't know if you've ever been to New York City, but they have a similar thing. They used to have a similar thing in the Greenwich Village. And I'm glad to see it happening here in Berkeley. So come to Berkeley, play chess, and kick down a little to the folks who are running it. Thank you, man.
And I never found out what the guy in the background was yelling about. But the next day at... People's Park and, well, People's Parking Lot, the Funau Bombs parking lot in Santa Cruz, I talked with Teddy.
Okay, well, it's December 7th, and it's around 11:15 at Lot 27 on Front Street, talking with...
This is Teddy.
And Teddy, you have you have something to say.
Yeah, they took me to jail and charged me with a felony when I was quietly charging by myself at the Enterprise building. They said that I had created a weighted cane or something like that, and I didn't create a weighted cane. I found an art piece inside our kitchen area, and I'm known for not being violent, and I was by myself, nonviolent, just charging peacefully, and they're charging me with a felony.
What was this location again?
Enterprise, the rental building. It has a charging port outside. So
stealing their electricity.
I was stealing electricity. I was trespassing, but I was not guilty of a felony.
How many cops came and took
six?
Well, you're pretty
and
serious.
And I was also assaulted while in handcuffs. I told them all that I had. Torn ACL and torn rotators, and while in handcuffs,
right shoulder,
right and left shoulder both, and a torn ACL, and they folded my knees behind my head and sat on me and told me to stop resisting.
And what time of day was it, or night?
About 2 a.m.
And do you remember the names of any of the cops?
No, sir. Oh, sir.
All male?
Yes.
White?
Yes.
Get out of the way here, sir. And how long were you in jail?
Just for about 12 hours, and they released me.
Any experiences in jail of any note?
No, I just stayed in a cell by myself. They didn't feed me. They just let me go. And I got out on Thanksgiving. But prior to, they did assault me. I now today have problems with my left knee on top of it. Like, it hurts really bad. I think they tore my ACL on my left side.
Have you been to, the ER to report it? Because it's a pain in the ass. Might be good to do.
No, sir. I have not been to any hospital. It just really does hurt. Like, it hurts.
I believe you. If you want to document it later for some eager attorney to get money 5 years down the road or something like that.
Then I should probably get it documented.
Just a document that it happened, yeah.
All right.
Anything else happening that you think we should know about?
Well, the lot is starting to work together a little more. People are starting to become safer together. At the Funau Bombs lot. There's more unity. There's more protection of each other. It's still, a very dysfunctional family, but it's becoming more functional, and it's a beautiful thing.
How is the connection with the folks on the levee?
Well, we're trying to introduce a family orientation with all of this. We're trying to become just a big family so we can have eyes everywhere, so we just have safety in our community.
And what about the Benchlands? Any connections with them?
We try and avoid those connections. There's a lot of negativity coming specifically from the opioid addicted people who are, well...
Opioid addicted
and very, very, cannibalistic.
In the sense that...
They don't care, they don't have love, they don't have anything left of them. All they have is their addiction.
Do you have any connections personally with folks in the Benchlands that you know?
No, I try to not to. I try not to because there's just too much negativity. Like, the government knew what it was doing, putting that many miserable people together. They made a huge misery pile, so there's no breath for them. They did exactly what they wanted to do. They're torturing them.
How long have you yourself been around here?
7 years.
And how long have you been outside?
20 years.
And where were you before?
Washington, Utah, Oregon, here in California, other parts of California. I've been all over the West.
Were you previously in encampments mostly, or were you camping alone?
Camping alone, mostly just with my hammock. I'm an Eagle Scout. I don't really camp in town. I like to be out of town and just quiet and have my peace. I don't litter, so I don't get kicked out, and I just kind of hang out. I make myself useful.
Yet now you're camping here.
I'm protecting people.
How does it feel, this relatively new environment for you compared to how you were?
It's really hard for me because I'm a son of a Native American shaman. Like, we're set to be apart from people because our empathic is very draining. We're not supposed to be in the thick of things.
Which tribe are you from?
Onondaga Iroquois, Haudenosaunee.
Do you speak the lingua?
No. I'm a fire keeper, though. That's what we are called, of the Iroquois Nation. We are the fire keepers.
And tell us, non-Iroquois, what that means.
That is like the heart. That is the spirit of the people, the fire. And so we carry that fire, and we protect that fire. We protect the spirit of the people.
And you also smoke the occasional cigarette?
Cigarette and marijuana. Yes, I do.
Anything you've learned here in the last few months that you want to pass on?
Patience.
Fair enough. And we've been talking with?
Teddy.
Anything you want to add, Teddy?
I love everybody, and I'll continue to defend them all. I don't care who it is or what the numbers are. If you're picking on somebody, it's not right. Don't do it.
Samuel Battle.
And Samuel, you're looking at the latest issue, the December issue of Street Spirit, which I'm delivering to the Food Now Bombs table and also is available at the Huff meetings at the Sub Rosa Cafe. And if you can catch me in my sticker mobile, you get it to me directly. You found an article you liked, Samuel.
Yeah, it's about holidays have nothing to do about where you live. It's about how you feel. I really liked about it because it talks about people that are not feeling like they are welcome or they are unwelcome during the holidays because they're on a plane or they live on the streets, and a lot of the people are not wanting to go see their family or go do this or do some of the things they would like to do because they feel unwelcome during the holidays. And this is right on par with the problem with the AA, me feeling unwelcome in AA.
You've spoken of that previously.
Yes, so this is, a lot of people are being judged during the holidays, you know what I mean? And I admit, some of the homeless make more reason to be judged, like the drama that you see going on right now. But during the holidays, the homeless people need to be welcomed as much as, again, they need to be cared for because we don't really have much of anything. And a lot of the people that are on the streets need to feel welcome because Some of them don't have any family members looking out for them. Some of them are dying through the holidays because it gets cold and this and that. Some of them are not getting the food they need. And some of them are having real problems in their lives that they're dealing with during the holidays. Being sad, depressed. This is a time where people are feeling emotions of all types. Like with me, I lost my adopted dad a couple years ago in December. So we all got things that we go through the holidays, especially the homeless kids. People that live in houses, they got families to spend their time with. A lot of us don't really feel welcome to spend time with other people because we're unclean, we're on the streets, or we don't want to be judged, this and that. And this is like, that's why homeless people during the Christmas time is really in need, because we don't really have much people out there helping us during the Christmas time, a lot of or any holidays, because a lot of people are spending time with the family. A lot of people don't want to help the homeless or this and that. And it's just, like, really hard because we ain't got really, a lot of family members don't want to accept us into their home because we haven't had a bath or we're stinking or whatever the reason. We're having all these other problems in our lives.
Any changes in the encampment here since we last talked? You talked then about, one of the times we talked previously, you talked about working on new conflict resolution approaches.
Well, there's been ups and downs with that. Like, a couple of days ago, there was a brawl here. And I was trying to get in between both the people fighting and separate them. Oh, you all right?
I'm leaning against the car. A little support here. Go ahead.
And pretty much, so there's a lot. Oh, let me pull this up so I can read the rest of it later. I mean, there's been a lot of problems, but there's going to be problems because this is the Christmas time, so a lot of people here are going through it. A lot of people here are using hard drugs. A lot of people here are doing this, this, and that. So it's just like really F. There's been fights here and there, so there's been a lot of ups and downs here, but it always will be. Like last night, someone had to call the cops because there was this girl here loaded like a mother. She looked like she was a minor, and a lot of people here were scared that something was going to happen to her. So the cops didn't want to do nothing, so Food Not Bombs, with the help of a couple of other people, drove her back to her motel so she was safe for the night because it was too fucking gone. So there's always these little issues, and it's really hard when it comes to new people coming to the encampment when nobody knows who the hell they are. We don't know how to help them. It's just like hard. You know what I mean? And we got new people coming to the encampment all the time, and they all got their issues. Like a couple of days ago, somebody lost their Parkinson's medicine. And we didn't know he had Parkinson's, and he was in one of his episodes. And we had to look around and find out what was wrong with him, and it took a while to actually find out that he needed his pills, and they were in his tent somewhere. So it was like, but in the end, we got like all these people trying to help. I'm just like, it's all about ups and downs, but it's about how you deal with them that makes these encampments stay. Yeah, there's a lot of fights, but there's also a lot of love and a lot of people helping, too. So it's pretty much like a makeshift family. People try to help each other out as a group. They get in little arguments, they get in little debates, but overall, it's okay. You know what I mean? Every once in a while, it seems like it's too hectic, but it always comes down later in the day.
How long have you been here now, Sammy?
I don't live in this encampment. I live somewhere else, but I've been in Santa Cruz about like 10 years, and I've always been in and through going to Food Not Bombs.
And what's your analysis of this encampment?
Too many drugs, to be honest. And we got Cooper, he's trying to dress people's wounds when they have staph infections and MRSA and all this other stuff, and it's putting everybody at risk. It was like, it's
you have concerns.
Yeah, we've already lost two people in this parking lot.
Who were they?
One guy that died over there.
Kevin Lacey.
Yep.
Kevin. The other?
I don't know the other guy.
Is this more recent, the other guy?
Yep. They're both around the same time frame, I hear. But we've just had, this is starting to end up like the Ross camp. And a lot of people died at the Ross camp. A lot of people are not getting fed. That's why they shut it down, because there was too many problems. People are dying, this and that. It was all bad.
I think they shut it down because they don't like homeless people in one place. Or
yeah, but there were also people dying there, too.
I don't know how many people actually died. Do you have any figures on that?
No, I don't know how many, but I know a couple people died there.
I think you're right. Anything you want to add?
I don't know what to add. It's just the situation with the homeless needs help, and that's all I can say. Thanks.
And we've been talking with?
Samuel Battle.
Thanks, Samuel.
Bye.
All those people in Orlando. Why did he do it? Was it Islamic State? Was it YouTube videos, the way they disseminate? Was it radical imams preaching the jihad, saying, go commit a massacre in the name of God? Who killed all those people in Orlando? Why did he do it? What made him buy a gun? Was it hard to be an Afghan after 9-1-1? Or was it as a child? Did he hear the politician who said 500,000 dead kids was still the right decision? Who killed all those people in Orlando? Why did he do it? Did the Air Force play a part when they bombed the wedding party? Is that what froze his heart? Was it a lack of mental health care that made things go so wrong? Or was there no way left to make him feel that he belonged? Who killed all those people in Orlando? Why did he do it? Did he wish he hadn't been born into the world in his own gay skin? Did he loathe himself? Is that how it all began? And just who had taught him it was wrong to love another man? Who killed all those people in Orlando? Why did he do it? Was it the NRA who made it easy for him to express himself this way? Another legally purchased weapon that fired automatic rounds, leading to the scene with 50 bodies on the ground. Who killed all those people in Orlando? Why did he do it? Perhaps it's only him to blame. He's just acting on free will, an individual shame. Maybe he grew up in a vacuum and carried out a senseless act. Maybe we're wrong to try to question or to ascertain the facts. Who killed all those people in Orlando?
Mind if I record this?
No.
So I'm here at the Food Not Bombs lot before Food Not Bombs arrive. Hey, again. And it's December 8th, about 5 after 12. I'm talking with
John Blythe.
And John, you say you've had your computer ripped off?
Yeah, I'm sort of a blogger. I'm known mostly as Blue Sky Big Star. I was actually pretty popular. And I've been... basically, my whole life has been dismantled by people like George Soros, and my parents actually work for him and the Department of Defense, and they made me homeless. And now the computer with all the information has been stolen the day after I was kicked out of the armory for very dubious reasons. They had no specific reason for me being kicked out of there.
How long ago was that?
3 days.
And how long were you there before?
I was there almost 6 months, and they were about to get me a place, but there was a lot of crookedness and lying, and I pointed it out, and I made a complaint about management. Like, a lot of files on my computer were hacked, and when it was in their possession, there was, like, this guest user that just suddenly showed up, and when helicopters would go by, like... all of a sudden, the Bluetooth would turn on my computer, because I was illegally arrested. I was maliciously prosecuted for assault with a deadly weapon.
How long ago?
June of 2020. And they dropped the charges in February of this year. And
what was the incident? What happened?
Well, the police never came. I was being burglarized. I was beaten up by 10 cops in my first malicious prosecution.
Santa Cruz police?
And the LAPD. And the city attorney's office. And my mother, who the LAPD kept saying outranked them, even though she's not LAPD. There was basically a coup at 911, and there's my family's inextricably linked to it, having worked with George Soros and having stolen my idea for a novel for to bring peace in the Middle East, which was to be called The Apologetic Terrorist. She took it and she sold it to the goddamn Pentagon. But it's
how did he get it right when he plagiarized it?
Well, they plagiarized it, but I knew how dangerous it was, how much they wanted. They actually came to me. They actually offered me the whole world. And they've tried to Britney Spears me. I had to flee L.A. for my life.
When did you leave L.A.?
I left in June. June, right before my birthday.
Any hassles with Santa Cruz police?
No.
How have they treated you?
Like angels compared to LAPD.
I mean, fundamentally, you didn't have much to do with them, or they gave you coffee? Or?
Well, I think they're working on my issues, and I think... The fact that there's less corporations in Santa Cruz, I don't think they have as much, and it's a small town, that there's not as much bad stuff in it, but I'm sure they're everywhere. They've got things infiltrated everywhere to the Rothschilds, you know.
Did you find a place to roost outside?
I started roosting, I guess. I'm supposed to take a job where I live in with someone, but... all of a sudden, I'm getting harassed from God. They don't want me to stay there. The management, I've never done anything wrong there or anything. I don't have a record of any sort. And
private owner, motel?
No, it's a city-run, low-income housing where an older person can bring in someone to help them live. So you cook for them, clean for them.
Somebody brought you in?
Well, I knew someone there. You have to, you know, it helps when there's someone who qualifies who wants you because they're actually the person who hires you. So, anyway, this person's getting harassed. And I, you know, I have to wonder every time something weird happens, maybe it is because of the other issues that I have been able to prove. But, yeah, I'm just looking to,
how is the person getting harassed, if you wish to say?
I've been harassed by...
you're getting harassed, you said.
I've gotten harassed. My friends have gotten harassed.
This person that you were invited to stay with.
Oh, the management all of a sudden says that he can't have people over, even though we explained to him I'm supposed to be the worker that lives there. And, I mean... there have been other people there, but I'm not associated with them. I didn't cause any problems, and I'm the worker. So why are they telling him I can't stay there?
So you're not sure whether you'll be able to come back tonight?
Maybe, maybe not. But because I can't carry a telephone, it's hard to keep in touch, so I have to walk around and or get people to drive me or... you know, because these cell phones and the spying network and apparatus they have, people need to realize it's extremely dangerous. The Eleanor Pyburn, who was the witness in my trial, who they didn't even allow me to use.
How is this?
She was murdered.
How is this encampment been treating you?
I lost my computer yesterday night, so...
You're in this place.
Yeah. So,
you think you lost it, or do you think someone took it?
No, they took it. Well, they were so bold. There's no zipper on my thing, and it's a little bit open. My bag was too close to the entrance. They grabbed it while I was in there.
So not so nicely here, I suppose.
Well, thievery is bad, but, you know, other people are very nice and helpful with, you know, issues and stuff. And, you know, they do look out for each other.
How long have you been associated with this encampment? You said 3 days?
Oh, two. Yeah, I've been out 4 days now. I took two motel days.
Okay.
That reimbursed by General Assistance.
Well,
but I've been absolutely traumatized by what happened. I literally barely got out with my life, and the LAPD was part of it. I was beaten up by 10 police officers there.
Nobody with a video.
And now, like, I think they're trying.
No one with a video
camera. They're trying to destroy. Oh, I had video.
Very good.
I have video. Let's see if I can recover it. That's why I need a thumb drive right now. If you can give me a high-capacity thumb drive, I think I can recover it. I don't know how they're doing it, but things are disappearing from certain thumb drives that I've had. And, you know, I can't leave anything alone.
Well,
because I'm being watched.
And, again, we've been talking with, if you want to say.
John Blythe, Blue Sky, Big Star, blogger.
Thank you. May I call you John?
Yes. And what's your Robert? Okay.
I'll give you my card in case you want to hear yourself again on the net.
I'm fine. I think I did a good job. But you have a card for your phone number?
I do.
Okay.
Thank you, John.
So now let's try to get a hold of Dread Eye, who's a man who lives in his vehicle. You've listened to him before. I ran into him around the same time. Dread Eye. Hi, it's Robert calling back, as I promised I would. Did you want to talk about anything for the net?
I'm taking a nap right now. Can you call me back later?
We can try to do it maybe tomorrow or the next day if you'd like.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you.
All right, get a rest. Take care.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. So perhaps on Sunday we'll be able to play more of Dread Eye's most recent concerns. I think he's concerned about having been bullied, pressured, or talked into a deal that put him on probation and made him vulnerable to further harassment by police. Here's a story from, let's see, I'm getting it online, but it's come from a number of news sources. AtlantaBlackStar.com is what I catch from the online address. A year later, former Ohio deputy that put 5 shots in Casey Goodson's back while he stood outside his home a year later is charged with murder by Nicole Duncan Smith December 5th. Some 363 days after Columbus, Ohio man Casey Goodson Jr. was gunned down from behind as a 23-year-old was on the doorstep of his home bearing Subway sandwiches for his family, the former Franklin County Sheriff's deputy who killed him was charged with murder this past week. The December 4th, 2020 killing, many details of which remain obscured in changing accounts and official silence almost from the moment it happened, sparked protests in Columbus after then Franklin County Deputy SWAT team member Jason Meade put 5 shots from his rifle into the back of the young black man. In the years since the slaying, Goodson's family and advocates for justice had awaited signs that the now retired deputy might be subjected to criminal justice. By Friday, December 3rd, the day after the charges were announced, Meade, who turned himself in to authorities on Thursday, pleaded not guilty during a video court appearance to 2 counts of murder and 1 count of reckless homicide. He was released from jail Friday on $250,000 bond. Last week's indictment announcement left Goodson's mother, Tamela Payne, quote, overwhelmed with joy, she said. A 9/11 call made moments after the shooting to the Columbus Division of Police from Sharon Payne, Goodson's grandmother, captured how the family learned their loved one had come to harm. Quote, my grandson just got shot in the back when he comes in the house. I don't know if he's okay or not because he's still out there. When asked by the dispatcher if anyone saw the shooting, she said, "No, he went to the dentist or somewhere and came home. All I know is that there's a bunch of gunfire. He's not a bad kid. He doesn't have a police record. He works. I don't know what happened." Initial reports on the slaying described how Meade, then a 17-year sheriff's deputy, was in the field that day as part of his work with the U.S. Marshals Service Fugitive Task Force looking for violent offenders. Goodson was not a target of the task force and did not have any criminal warrants. The task force had finished its work for the day and came up empty-handed in its search for fugitives when Goodson apparently drove by the parking lot where the law enforcement team was gathered for its wind-down that afternoon. Officials said in the days after the shooting that Meade claimed he saw Goodson waving a gun as he drove by, and the deputy followed him to his home. The Marshals Service says Meade was not acting on behalf of the task force. Meade claimed nearly a year ago that he then commanded Goodson to drop his gun and fired only when the young man responded by pointing a gun at Meade. Goodson's family says he was only carrying Subway sandwiches for his younger siblings and a face mask and had put the key in the kitchen door lock when he was hit by the gunfire. There were no witnesses to the shooting, and it was not captured on dash camera or a body cam, as Franklin County deputies do not carry body cameras. After the indictment, Meade's attorney, Mark Collins, released a more detailed account of his client's version of events in a statement on Thursday. Collins' statement said Meade followed Goodson to his grandmother's neighborhood, believing that he saw him point a gun at another driver. After he parked his car, he put on a tactical vest and identified himself as law enforcement. With the vest on, he trailed Goodson on foot to Payne's residence. Meade said Goodson was carrying a gun in his right hand and a plastic bag in his left hand. He said that he again identified himself as a member of law enforcement and ordered Goodson to show him his hands. Instead, the lawyer states that Meade saw him raise his gun. The deputy, quote, commanded Mr. Goodson to once again drop the gun, and when that command was ignored and while the gun was pointing at Mr. Meade, he, in fear for his life as well as those inside the house, fired his weapon at Mr. Goodson, the statement details. The family, as it has all along, emphatically disputes this account. They contend that Goodson, who was licensed to carry a concealed firearm, was not holding a weapon at the time of the shooting. Investigators have claimed a gun was recovered at the scene, but have not made public where they say it was found. He was targeted, pursued, and shot from behind while walking into his own home, Goodson's family's attorney, Sean Walton, said at a news conference Thursday. On that day, Casey was simply trying to get home. Tamela Payne said during the news conference, "It's been a year of sadness. It's been a year of grief. It's been a year of pain. But I know that every day of this year that my family and I wake up and just fight for what's right." In the year since the shooting, Meade, who took a disability retirement from the sheriff's office this past summer, has come under scrutiny for past statements he's made as an ordained minister about use of force. He talked about the intersection of his faith with his work from the pulpit to his Rosewood Free Will Baptist Church congregation, recorded in a YouTube video that has since been deleted. "There are times for righteous release, that's what I call it, when we have a use of force," he sermonized. "Because every now and then you have to actually use force. We don't go around looking for it because we don't have to. Plenty of people out there will give you that opportunity, so we don't have to be bullies going looking for it. That's why I say it's a righteous release." Franklin County Sheriff Dallas Baldwin, after the former deputy from his office was indicted, released a statement urging officers in his department to not rush to judgment. He said that he has reminded my staff that while everyone is presumed innocent until proven guilty, the standards for being a Franklin County Sheriff's deputy must be even higher than that of our criminal justice system. As law enforcement officers, we must meet this higher standard because of the immense trust we ask the community to place in us, he continued to share. It's vital to maintain that trust, which is why I've tasked members of my staff to review the facts from the independent investigation when we're able to fully access them and determine how this agency can best learn from this tragedy. Goodson's mother, believes that Deputy Meade did not extend that courtesy to her son. She says that she wants a conviction and a life sentence for the man who took her son's life. And my only comment is, it seems a hell of a long time, a year, to still be waiting for an investigation by the Sheriff's Department or any other agency of that situation. And here's a story a year ago, also from the Atlanta Black Star. Apparently it's a video. Well, the story is written, but it also describes a video. Ohio officer shoots unarmed black man within seconds of encounter stemming from non-emergency call of someone playing music in their vehicle by Niara Savage, December 23, 2020. A Columbus, Ohio police officer was relieved of duty after it was discovered he did not turn on his body-worn camera until after fatally shooting an unarmed black man early Tuesday morning. Columbus Police Chief Thomas Quinlan relieved 44-year-old officer Adam Coy of duty, stripped him of his police powers, and ordered him to turn in his gun and badge on Tuesday. The man, identified as Andre Morris Hill, 47, was shot after officers responded to a neighbor's non-emergency call about a man sitting in an SUV playing loud music and turning the vehicle on and off repeatedly. When police arrived at 1:37 a.m., Hill was standing in the garage with a cell phone in his left hand. Within seconds of Hill approaching the officers, still holding his cell phone, Coy raised his weapon and fired. Hill died less than an hour later at the hospital. Both officers at the scene activated their body-worn cameras immediately after shooting the man, and the look-back feature of the camera captured the shooting. The feature captured and saved the prior 60 seconds from before the camera was activated. The footage from after the shooting shows a delay in rendering of first aid to the man, the Public Safety Department said in a statement. The look-back feature did not capture the audio of the shooting. Because the officers were responding to a non-emergency call, the dash cameras were not activated. The investigation has shown so far that Hill was visiting someone at the time of the shooting. No weapon was recovered at the scene. Let me be clear, if you're not going to turn on your body-worn camera, you cannot serve and protect the people of Columbus, Mayor Andrew Ginther said during a news conference on Tuesday. Ginther said the city had invested more than $5 million towards getting cameras for officers and that it was not acceptable that the cameras were not turned on. Columbus released footage of the shooting on Wednesday. The 30-second clip published by 10TV shows an officer approaching Hill as he stands in the garage of a home with his cell phone in his hand. The video ends before any shots are fired. According to 10TV, after Hill was shot, Coy gave him several commands, shouting profanities at the dying victim who did not move. "Put your fucking hands out to the side! Hands out to the side now!" Coy shouts. "Roll to your stomach now!" Coy approached him and rolled him over. Additional footage released by the department revealed that 5.5 minutes passed after Hill's shooting before an officer attempted to administer first aid. Ginther shared his frustration as well at the news conference. "From what we can see, none of the officers initially at the scene provide medical assistance to Mr. Hill. No compression on the wounds to stop the bleeding, no attempts at CPR, not even a hand on the shoulder and an encouraging word that medics were en route. Coy, a 19-year-old veteran with the Columbus Division of Police, is still receiving pay pending the investigation of the shooting. The Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation said it was called on to investigate the shooting. Coy was involved in an excessive force complaint in 2012 that resulted in the city paying a $45,000 payout. He was suspended for 160 hours and did not lose his job. I am deeply saddened, frustrated, angry, demanding answers of what happened in our community earlier this morning, and I am committed to transparency and accountability in our division of police. Ginther," I guess Ginther is the mayor? Maybe he's the police chief. No, I guess he's... This story is called Video, Ohio Officer Shoots Unarmed Black Man Within Seconds of Encounter Stemming from Non-Emergency Call of Someone Playing Music in Their Vehicle. So, subsequently, Wikipedia describes this as follows. On February 3rd, 2021, that was several months later, apparently they're a little faster about dealing with this case than the Goodson case, a Franklin County grand jury indicted Coy on charges of murder, one count, felonious assault, one count, dereliction of duty, two counts. The latter two charges are based on Coy's failure to activate his body camera and failing to alert Officer Detweller that he believed Hill posed a threat. At the request of the Franklin County prosecutor, the Ohio Attorney General and his designees were appointed a special prosecutor to prosecute the case in lieu of local prosecutors. Coy pleaded not guilty. The court set bond at $3 million. In May 2021, Columbus City officials agreed to pay a settlement of $10 million to Mr. Hill's family. If approved by the City Council, this would be the largest settlement ever paid out by the city. According to attorneys, it's also the largest pretrial settlement in a police use of force case in Ohio history. Vigils and demonstrations. And, of course, there were demonstrations on December 24th in the neighborhood where the shooting occurred. Demonstrators also protested the death of Casey Goodson, who was killed by police on December 4th. Goodson was not killed by a Columbus Division of Police officer, but rather by a Franklin County Sheriff's deputy. Hill's family hired civil rights attorney Benjamin Crump. Crump spoke at a vigil for Hill, as did Hill's daughter. On December 26th, a vigil for Hill was, and so forth and so on. Andre's Law. In February 2021, the Columbus City Council unanimously approved a new city ordinance, Andre's Law, requiring city police to turn on cameras during enforcement actions, including all police stops, pursuits, uses of force, arrests, forced entries, and any adversarial encounters whenever they approach people or exit patrol cars. The ordinance also requires officers who use force that cause injuries to render first aid and call emergency medical personnel unless there is an imminent threat to officers. I've requested in the past any listing of injuries caused by the police department for people during the past year, and my requests have been routinely been turned down for the Santa Cruz Police Department, by the way. The law also requires officers to receive CPR and basic first aid training on an ongoing basis. The ordinance requires that failure to turn on a camera or render first aid could result in a departmental discipline, or if done with reckless disregard, criminal charges for dereliction of duty. I'm not aware that California has any such ordinance or that the city of Santa Cruz has any such ordinance penalizing police officers for not properly using their cameras. Of course, the problem is always who has control of the video. And I note that the last entry on this page was September of this year, and there doesn't appear to be any outcome if there ever was a trial for Officer Adam Coy. Not that I've found in my brief look into the issue, my brief browse through the what I can find in 3 minutes. So I'm going to end on another song by David Rovics, but thanks for listening. If you have any recent information or thoughts about how our police department's policies can be improved, any thoughts about how these broadcasts can be improved, any thoughts about anything you've heard on the air, you can give me a call on the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, in area code 831. Contact me at rnorris3@hotmail.com, or run into me on the street and just buttonhole me and tell me what's cooking. I also hold meetings every Thursday at 11 o'clock at the Sub Rosa Cafe, right next to the bike church at 703 Pacific. Maybe I'll talk with you in one of those times.
At 1 a.m. on a Wednesday morning, no one knew what was in store. Fire started and quickly spread till it covered every floor. Stairwell locked, no way out. Smoke and fire all around. Parents grab their little babies, drop them 10 floors to the ground. People cry to no avail. 24 stories tall, engulfed in flames. The fire ladders were just like toys
were no sprinklers, few smoke alarms, fire extinguisher, out of date, all repairs, if ever done, always too little, too late.